thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
720 WGN, a happy Monday afternoon to everyone out there. John Williams has the day off here today. John Hanson filling in until 3 o'clock on this gorgeous Monday afternoon in Chicago. Man, the day started out cloudy, looked dreary. Not anymore. Man, just a gorgeous day across the Chicagoland area, and we'll certainly welcome those sunny skies. And a happy Monday to you, and we're going to be chatting about a whole range of things, you should or shouldn't do in your relationships coming up. Also, are you having big problems with your plants, specifically your boxwoods, those green bushes that you can form and carve into things and make shapes out of, or just leave out in the front yard? A lot of boxwoods are coming up brown this year. They're not turning that normal green, and they're dying off. We're going to talk to Tony Abrascott, a good friend of the show, about what is happening there, and other plants and issues, too. The farmers are having it real tough. I know Orion's been talking a lot about that. Most of the seeds not even in the ground due to this wet weather. But we're dry today. We're sunny today, and we're going to focus on that instead. And after a busy weekend, why not? And Lauren Lapka, I was following your Facebook page. A busy weekend for you. Looked like you were kind of playing a tourist in your own city a little bit all weekend long.
I was hopping around like a frog. And I never do that, to be honest.
You're more of a you stay in, enjoy the weekend as you can?
Yeah, the older I get, the more I don't like to deal with crowds.
Right, right. But you did the Blues Fest, right?
I did. I stopped by Blues Festival, and then I made my way over to the new rooftop bar at Navy Pier to watch the fireworks, and it was amazing.
How was the bar up there?
Oh, my gosh. It was packed.
Because they build this as, like, the biggest rooftop bar
in the country.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's a giant space, so must have been nice.
It's huge. It's got a lot of cool things. Obviously, a lot of people, you know, partially outside, but inside area, and then you got a lot of fire pits. It was super cool.
Yeah.
Perfect for the fireworks.
Well, and I was going to say, yeah, you get those, what, Wednesdays and Saturday nights, and, you know, it's fun because we are very lucky. I think a lot of us, you know, that live here in the area, we're so blessed with so many things to do, but Lauren, I'm kind of like you. I barely ever really make it out into a giant crowd. I'll go to a Cubs game or a Sox game anytime or any sporting event, but going to a festival isn't always at the top of my list, or maybe checking out the trendy new rooftop spot isn't on the top of my list, but man, we should get out more, people.
I know. I really need to let my fear or hatred of lines keep me from doing things.
Oh, yes. No, see, I still won't wait in a line. Now, if there's any line associated with it, very rarely. Well, the people that wait, like, I'm trying to think of the cheese and oven grinder, the pizza place that's really popular, and you got to go it's like a two-hour wait. No chances I'm waiting 2 hours for anything.
Yeah, no.
Elif, I know you had a show last night you were at, up pretty late at night, going on out, and you saw one of your idols, I guess you could say.
Yeah, sure. Are you?
You sure built this up like it, and
well,
your first chance to praise her, and nope, not so much. Who'd you see?
She's not my idol, but I do really like her music. Her name's Billie Eilish, and she played at the United Center last night. It was originally supposed to be at the Aragon Ballroom, mm-hmm. and I'm going to be writing a review on her show, and that's why I went. And one of the things I wanted to actually look up is the reason for the change of venue. And I think it's just because she originally had two shows at the Aragon.
Okay.
And maybe they consolidated it into one, and in order to also
fit the crowd of all those people, yeah.
More people in.
She's young.
She's 17.
Okay.
And she packed a sold-out United Center.
Wait, the United Center sold out for that thing, or it was packed to the brim?
It wasn't packed to the brim,
okay.
But her show was sold out,
okay.
So maybe they had a cap on it after
they made the
switch. But she's only 17, and she told us, she said, "Hey, Chicago, this is my biggest venue I've ever played in my whole life."
Mm-hmm.
So that shows you this is the first time she played an arena setting, mm-hmm. which is awesome. We broke her in that way.
And what kind of music? How would you describe it?
Indie/pop. Mm-hmm. Her voice at times sounds like Lorde's voice, but I hate comparing people because they don't want to hear that.
Right, of course.
And she's kind of eerie. She has a lot of creepy themes in her music.
Okay.
And the imagery of the performance was awesome.
Just like the projections that they use and the lighting of it all?
Yes. She had a bed that was hanging from the ceiling that would come down once in a while because, like you mentioned before, one of her songs is about sleep paralysis.
So that's what really got me peaked. I mean, I'm interested in her as a whole and what she's doing, and I like that you're interested in her, and I trust your sense of music and performers.
Hey, thanks.
As one yourself, yeah. Sleep paralysis. Can you let people know, and you have firsthand account of this, what the heck sleep paralysis is? I've heard of it. I don't want to seem like I'm totally naive.
Okay.
But walk us through, for those that maybe don't know quite all about what it is.
It's the state of mind or consciousness between REM sleep and waking life, basically.
Okay.
So it's when you get stuck between those two phases. So it's like a psychological malfunction.
Okay.
And your body is paralyzed. You think that your body's paralyzed. You're frozen. You can't move.
So you think you're awake.
You think you're awake. Actually, you are awake.
Okay.
Because you're out of REM sleep.
But your eyes are closed.
But your eyes are closed and they won't open.
Okay.
And the only reason is because it's like this malfunction, like I said. But you can see everything around you because the subconscious mind knows where it fell asleep, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know where you are in that
room,
moment.
Right, right.
So you can see things around you. However, sometimes it manufactures things too,
mm-hmm.
the mind. So you, knock on wood, this hasn't happened to me more than once, but some people will see a dark figure.
Oh.
And again, knock wood, that hasn't happened.
So it's horrifying, right? You can't wait. You want to wake up.
Yeah.
All you want to do is wake up,
mm-hmm.
but your body is just laying there.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going to play you a quick excerpt from this song that I just pulled, and here it is.
All right.
The debt I owe, gotta sell my soul, cause I can't say no, no, I can't say no. Then my limbs are frozen, my eyes won't close, and I can't say no, I can't say no.
Careful.
Step on the glass, staple your tongue.
That's kind of eerie.
Yeah, so she's literally talking about the body being frozen in that moment, in that state.
So what I want to know, 312-981-7200, I was kind of shocked when I looked up how many people suffer from sleep paralysis. And it can be a one-time thing, or it can be a recurring thing. And the numbers are all over the place. They think between 8% and 50% of mm-hmm. our population have experienced sleep paralysis at some time. Which is pretty shocking to me. That number is so high. But what I want to know is, like, are you saying anything while you're in that state? Is anything happening? Is there a signal that's, like, could someone else help you? Like, if your partner was next to you, would they know when you were suffering through this?
I think they would because I know that after it happening a few times, I know that I am whispering when I'm trying to say, like, help, help.
Mm-hmm.
But I only know that because one time I woke up like that and my cat looked at me like I was nuts.
So you woke up and you're like, oh God, the cat knows.
He knows that something's going on.
Well, yeah. That's what I want to hear from someone. If anyone out there sleeps with someone that has sleep paralysis, 312-981-7200, I'd love to hear from you to find out what that's like when you sleep with someone like that. I've never quite obviously experienced it myself or seen it in my partner or my husband. I don't know how that works and how you'd be able to help someone. They say there's no cure to sleep paralysis. They don't know of any treatments that would help it work. I've obviously heard of insomnia, but it just sounds like this horrifying experience, and it's really piqued my interest here on this Monday afternoon. We'll get to that and so much more. John Hanson in for John Williams on 720 WGN.
Say it, spit it out. What is it exactly? The pain is the amount cleaning you out.
720 WGN. John Williams is out today. John Hanson here, filling in until 3 o'clock. Elif, remind us the name of the artist again. I can't remember it.
Billie Eilish.
Elif saw Billie last night at United Center. Sold out the show, and one of the topics she covered, she's all 17 years old, topic she covered was a sleep paralysis, which is something I knew existed, but I didn't quite know the extent of it, and I've got a billion questions about it, and luckily, you WGN listeners are always great to call in with these sorts of things. I'm curious, obviously, about what it is and how people experience it, and we've had some texters call in about it, and a couple on the line as well, but I want to know, like, from someone who is sleeping next to someone who has sleep paralysis, and we're going to go to line two. Kelly, you're on WGN.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
All right, so Kelly, your wife has sleep paralysis. Am I understanding that correct?
No, I suffer from
sleep
paralysis.
Oh, you suffer from it. Okay. So what?
Yeah, and
what's it like? No, I was just asking what it's like for you, and then maybe what's it like for your wife?
So for me, it's essentially you're frozen, and you feel conscious, like you feel like you're able to come out of it or snap out of it, but you can't. And so it essentially you're paralyzed. And for my wife, she's never seen it before until last week. I had an episode last week. We just bought a new bed, and apparently I was sort of snoring in some weird rhythmic way, and she looked over at me, and I was kind of like just basically stiff. So she tried to shake me, but I don't remember her trying to shake me, and I don't remember like the situation from that point forward, but it's frightening. It actually is.
When you're in that situation of sleep paralysis, are you able to tell yourself, oh, this is that paralysis, it's okay, calm down? Or do you have no control over really what you're thinking in those moments?
So I think, just essentially from my perspective, I think that initially, you know, having the episodes more than once before in my life, there must come a point in the process where you can actually talk yourself, you know, from it.
Okay.
But honestly, I don't know. But when you're in it, it
sounds horrifying. Yeah. And and your wife, so she said that you were stiff, but if someone was sleeping next to you, they wouldn't know, you know, unless they happen to be watching you or seeing changes or listening for changes, they would
correct.
Have no idea. So it's not like that there can be some cue where that person can then try to help wake you up out of it.
No, that's true. And then, so the last episode that I did have, in my mind, one thing I do remember is trying to, you know, say help. You know, I do remember doing that, but I don't remember her trying to wake me up.
Have you gone to the doctor at all? Have you talked to anyone about this? Do they offer any ideas or thoughts or pills
or
anything?
And, I haven't, and just having this, you know, presented on the radio, it kind of makes me feel like I should.
I mean, maybe it's not as bad. I know it sounds horrifying. I don't know if there's any physiological or physical side effects or besides the fear and maybe the anxiety that comes along with knowing that it can happen when you go to sleep. I have problems falling asleep, but once I am asleep, I am done for the night. And my wake-ups are usually, well, they're not peaceful. They're usually by the alarm at 3:30 in the morning, but that's a whole other story. Hey, Kelly, thanks for the phone call, and good luck with everything, okay?
Thank you. Take care.
Yeah, let's go to Eric. Eric, you're on WGN. You've had sleep paralysis.
Yeah, actually, now that I've heard some people talking about it, I do remember a few experiences where I've actually had that. Mine is a little strange, though.
Okay.
Think of the most obnoxious, worst painting job you could ever do for patterns and stuff like that on your walls.
Oh, painting. And okay, yeah.
When I was in that state, I woke up because I had to go to the bathroom, but I could not move whatsoever from the couch that I was sleeping on. And my additional problem was the ceiling was spinning with that pattern, the floor was spinning, and all the walls were spinning.
Oh.
When I was in that state.
But this wasn't a dream. This was, I mean, it differentiates itself from a dream, right?
Right, definitely, because I was awake. Because I knew I had to go to the bathroom, but I could not move. I was completely paralyzed. I could not say anything.
Oh, my gosh. Was it frightening?
The second time that I went through it, I recognized, I remembered. I'm like, okay, get up, move that leg, just get out of here. And it took a while, but I was able to eventually force myself to out of the paralysis.
Interesting.
But it's freaking.
Eric, I'm going to let you go. Yeah, I can't imagine. It sounds freaky, but we've had a few texters say the same thing, that they've had it a few times, and they honestly have to keep on telling themselves to move that leg, move that arm, be specific about it, and eventually you do that. Is that what happens with you, Ella, or do you eventually just, you wake up eventually? Or do you go back to sleep? Like, I don't know in which state this is in.
I do what the text said. I have to move my head really fast.
You shake your head.
And then I immediately get up, Like, I force myself to get up.
Is it like, not to try and compare it to something horrific like this, but let's say you were gasping for air and you finally wake up. Is it like that, like this moment of a finally?
There's gasping for air, too.
Really?
It sucks.
847 says, I have sleep paralysis frequently. At first it was horrifying. Now I'm used to it, so I can calm myself down and wait patiently till I snap out of it. I've had panic attacks in the past, very few. And the first few were horrifically scary. I know. I thought I was having a heart attack. So scary. But it's like the texter dealing with sleep paralysis. I now kind of, I haven't had one in a while, but can recognize, oh, this is what's coming on, and almost talk myself out of it. 620 says, I've had sleep paralysis. Try to scream to wake someone up and can't get anything over a whisper out. Try to get up, and all I ended up doing was rolling out of bed, which I guess would wake you up at that point, I think. Although the one caller said that they were shaking and couldn't do it.
Wow. Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's...
Well, I think it's cool that nothing's cool about the paralysis. It's cool that there's an, I've never heard of even a singer, you know, topic, you know, tackling this topic.
I know. I love that. It's so eerie. And so, like I was saying before, she displays some imagery on the projections behind her of just like it's animations mm-hmm. of people in bed, and there's one song called Copycat. I'm not going to keep going because
okay.
I'm going to write a review on this.
All right, yeah.
Give it all away.
Where can we find that review, Elif?
WGNradio.com as Radio Elif.
Very good stuff. All right, for those of you dealing with sleep paralysis, I hope this conversation didn't throw you into sleep, but I find it fascinating. It's something I knew existed, but maybe not the prevalency of it. Quick commercial break, then more on 720 WGN. WGN. Happy Monday afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Mr. Bertrand. That one story that caught my eye, not only the one that's happening in New York right now, but that boat ride along the Kankakee River.
Yeah.
You know, I went on a boat myself this weekend down on the Illinois River. We usually launch in Morris down in Grundy County. About an hour and 25-minute drive
from
here.
You know Morris very well. Yeah. My wife's from Morris.
Cute little town. Do some shopping there, some antiquing perhaps. We just went on the boat, but the river has been so high for so long, it finally is now well below flood stage and low enough that the boat launch is actually, you know, reachable.
Right.
And, oh, man, it still was high, not too high to obviously go boating in, but that current was moving fast.
Well, that's what they said in Kankakee County, too, that when it happened, the current was too strong for divers to go into the water.
That's just scary stuff. I mean, we were even, because we were thinking maybe we'll do wakeboarding or something, but it's like, you know, and we had the dogs, my brother's dogs, and we put the life vests on them, too. Just, you don't want anyone to get caught in that thing and obviously get, you know, swept away. But I was reading about the log jam, because I was like, oh, maybe it was because of debris, you know, like gathering. But they say the log jam's been there for about 25 years, but... which seems kind of surprising to me, but
right, you think they
yes, it's 25 feet across and it's been there for 30 years, but maybe it's more of a local thing. They always know that that's where it gathers. I don't really know, but you know, if you're not familiar with the waters, if you're thinking about going boating it all over the next couple weeks and just take it slow, and not saying that these guys weren't, I don't know the circumstances, but just be careful out there, people, because those currents, they are a-moving. I'm going to change gears. Maybe I'm delaying this topic because I know we're going to get some angry texts or calls, or maybe one from Enrique is going to ring on in. But there is an article out there. This is in...
don't blame it on the article, man. Yeah. You're bringing it up.
No. Well, this is interesting to me, and this is an interesting conversation to have. Obviously, you get married or you've been dating someone a long time, our bodies change. Some people get in great shape for a period of time. Some people are in worse shape over time, or we all gain weight over time. People I ebb and flow. I'm like a yo-yo. I'll go up 10 or 15 pounds, and then I'll be really good and lose 20. I'm on the low end right now, and I know I'll never gain it back. But let's be honest, I'm sure next year I'll be 10 pounds heavier, and it'll go back and forth. But I usually stay within a range. But there is an interesting conversation to have, and someone wrote to this author saying, my wife wants me to lose weight. Do I owe it to her to try? And the gist of the article is the author says, nope, you know, your weight, you get to define your weight. You get to define your diet, your physical activity, and your general appearance, not anybody else. This author goes on to say, I often see situations where one's spouse's appearance becomes a means of control, and the time they spend maintaining or altering the appearance is sets up an abusive dynamic. And I'm not trying to touch that area where someone is, oh, you need to be this weight to be someone that I will date. I don't think I'm trying to go at all in that direction. But what I'm saying is there a point in a relationship, 312-981-7200, where it is okay to talk to your spouse openly about the weight that they may have gained and that what that appearance is either doing to them physically, themselves physically, if it's become a serious issue, or from an attractiveness standpoint. And I know the initial reaction is no, never bring it up, but it's got to be an honest conversation because I imagine if, you know, for whatever reason, your wife, your husband, your boyfriend, your girlfriend is gaining a lot of weight and you notice and they probably notice it too. Eventually, is it okay? Should someone ever say anything? And maybe it's not, oh, you need to lose weight for me, but it's maybe this is healthy for you. And is there a good way to approach it? And Steve and I talked during the crosstalk and Steve kind of just laughed it off like, oh, there's no way you're going to be, don't do that. Tread lightly. And I agree with that sort of stuff. But isn't that a conversation that should eventually be had? And Elf, you're giving me those scary eyes right now.
I just don't know. I don't know.
Would you ever feel comfortable telling someone that? I don't know.
I don't know.
Have you ever been in that situation? We got a text from the 815. I don't think the initial reaction would be no. They're your spouse. You're both committed to each other for the rest of your lives. And you make every single decision together. Why not have a say in how a person looks, especially if it's detrimental to their health?
I'd rather have sleep paralysis, just so you know.
I don't think you're alone. But there's obviously different levels to this. Like, if someone gains the occasional 5 pounds or something, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking if it becomes a physical situation where you are losing attractiveness. And let's face it, as you're with someone longer and longer. I mean, I've only been married 6 months, so everything's great and blissful, and we're both in pretty good shape right now, and it's great. But obviously, as you get to know someone, you're with someone longer, that physical attractiveness can maybe go away or it becomes part of, you know, you're just used to that person. There's some mundaneness to it already. And then if that person isn't the person that you married, at least the way they look physically, is there a point to have that conversation? Or what, I mean, isn't it worse just to repress that all the time? To just always think it but never say anything? I don't know. Your thoughts, 312-981-7200. Let's go to Betsy. Betsy, you're on WGN.
Hi, I was listening and I thought, you know, the most important thing is to support your partner mm-hmm. that has possibly gained a lot of weight. And instead of really talking to them about how they look, really kind of talk to them about what's going on. Like, mm-hmm. why are they changing so much physically? Is there something going on emotionally with them, and how can you support them? And yes, I do understand, you know, the whole thing about physical attraction and that can change over time, but I think the most important thing really is to support your partner and figure out what's going on with them rather than talking to them about how they look.
Amen.
Yeah, more important to talk about how they feel and what's happening.
Betsy, I agree with you 100%. I think that it's a way of how you approach it. And I also want to say that if your partner is gaining weight and you're not, that doesn't mean that you're not having any role in it. You know, people have different metabolism levels or work regimens, and one person might be able to eat everything that, you know, you're cooking unhealthy food together, and that person doesn't gain a pound, but maybe you are. So maybe it's a team thing that you can work on something together. But Betsy, you're so on to mention the emotional part of it. So I guess what I'm summing up, Betsy, is you agree that at some point you can have that conversation. It's just about how you have that conversation that's important.
Absolutely. Yeah, because I think it could really be a blow up depending on how you bring it up, you know?
Right. And yeah, we're always so scared. There's always these jokes on these sitcoms about, like, oh, how do I look in this dress? And there's no right answer to the question. And clearly we're not talking about, you know, exactly how you fit in a dress or in a suit or your pants or something like that. It's a little bit deeper than that. Hey, Betsy, really appreciate the phone call. Going to Diane. Diane, you're on WGN.
Approach it from, how can I help you? Do you need me to cook differently? Do you need me to shop differently? Do we need to go out less often?
Mm-hmm.
That was my thought.
Yeah, like, are we just in this habit where we go out to eat? We're too busy with our everyday lives. We aren't cooking. And I like this idea of how you can help, because I think that as someone who struggles with weight, goes up and down a lot, maybe it's a matter of, hey, let's start looking at some fun options of cooking that we can do together. Or maybe let's commit to going on a walk every night X amount of miles. Or maybe let's join a gym together. So you kind of take ownership of it with your partner.
Yes.
All right. Amen to that. Thank you, Diane. Got a lot of texts on this one. If you think, and this is from the 6 Rio, I think if you no longer find them attractive, then it's time to start having a conversation about weight. Doesn't have to be about being overweight. I've been in a relationship where my partner was losing too much weight. Hey, good point. Someone is going the other way in terms of health. You know, they're maybe trying to lose weight. They had some weight to lose, and then they get too into it and they lose way too much weight. That's also just as unhealthy, if not more, in some cases. Other messages from the 219. No, as a person who has been fat and thin, no one knows you need to change more than you do. Encourage them if they want to do it. And that's a good point, too. I think the 219 is saying, look, this person, no one needs to tell someone that they're overweight. And having been there myself, I agree. You know when you have to go back into the drawer or go to the store and buy the pant sizes that are a little bit bigger. Maybe humiliating is not the word. I've certainly felt terrible doing it. And then someone says something to you, someone that you love, they say, oh, man, you're gaining weight. That's not the right way to do it. Maybe it's a matter of you as the person who, if you know you've gained some weight, maybe you talk to them. Hey, maybe you could help me out with this. But not everyone has that sort of withdrawal to do that. 269 chimes in. Yes, you should tell your partner if it becomes a matter of health and letting themselves go. The heavier a person is, the more unhealthy they are. It will limit what you can do, especially if you and a couple have always been outdoor type people. And now you have to limit what you do because of their weight. Yeah, it's not only the person that you look at across the way and you smile at and you love. If they look different, maybe they're not able to do the things that made you attracted to them in the first place. And I'm talking about activities, things that you do together outside, long walks, hiking, something like that. 847 says, regarding the weight conversation, you can't frame it from an appearance standpoint. It's mean, but absolutely from a health standpoint. If someone's gained a lot of weight, the ramifications for health issues are tremendous, for sure. Excessive weight gain, likely a sign of unhappiness from the 630. Yeah, I think a lot of people are kind of tapping into something here, that this physical situation is manifests itself from an emotional standpoint, or an emotional one manifests itself physically. It's an interesting debate. 708, having been married for 30 years, that is the one thing that can cause fallout for days if not addressed correctly. Boy, you're right. But I don't think that's a reason not to do it at all. 312-981-7200. We're talking about if your partner gains a substantial amount of weight. One, if you should talk to them. Or two, how you even approach that conversation. The person who wrote in for this opinion kind of said, do I owe it to her to try? And that's why I don't think you owe it to anyone to do that. I don't think that if you're married at a certain weight, that you are expected to be at or around that weight for your entire life. I don't think you owe that to that person you signed your life with. But I think you owe it to yourself and to your relationship to at least have the conversation. 815 brings up a good point. Can't you just love them the way you are? So sad about fat prejudice. There's something to be said about that, too. You know, we often say it's all about loving the person on the inside, not what they look like. And there's so much, that's the way it should be. But there are realities to what it is. I think that the physical discussion about, you know, if physically is making someone ill because they've gained too much weight or they're putting themselves at risk of certain health effects, I think that's a separate conversation. But yeah, if someone gains 20 pounds, they're still healthy, maybe they're a little bigger, maybe you're a little bigger, you know, who cares? Don't you love that person anyways? 815 says, hubby lost 25 pounds just by stopping drinking beer. I can walk miles, watch what I eat, and the scale doesn't budge. Middle-aged women have problems with this. That's true. 847, and I was sort of alluding to this, 847 chimes in, heavy people can be healthy. And that is very true. I think that, like I was saying, if you gain an appropriate amount of weight, even if you look a little bit bigger, you can be just as healthy cardiovascularly. Not always the case, but sometimes. Let's go to Christine. Christy, you're on WGN.
Hi, just a couple of things. Having lost a husband to diabetes and things, sometimes, like you said, people are gaining for emotional reasons, health reasons, and sometimes they don't even realize it. And so, yeah, that person actually owes it to themselves, not to anybody. But you as their partner, again, you're there to support, love, and be there for them. And on the word support, having worked with a lot of people with mental illness and other things, instead of saying, I notice this, I see this, I will help you. Help means like, okay, you can't do it yourself.
Right.
So a lot of times, instead of saying, I will help you, saying, hey, I'm noticing this, I'm seeing this, I will support you, here's what I will do to support you. And just especially with people dealing with mental health issues, the word support is much more encouraging rather than help, because help implies that you can't do it on your own. No difference than when you say, why are you gaining weight? Why is a defensive word as opposed to, you know, can you tell me about this? Or I'm noticing this. Let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, you're so right about that support, Christine. Also, like, I mean, these are the vows we take. And I mean, you know, take the religious angle outside of what a marriage is. You know, let's separate that discussion in a separate one. But, you know, the vows, it's in richer or poorer, you know, in health and sickness. I mean, that's where you need to be there for your partner the most, I feel like.
Right. And you love them because you love them, not because they're fat, skinny, big, tall, or small. Love is in your heart and in your soul. It's not about a physical thing. And if it is about physical, then you weren't in love to begin with.
Great point. 815 chimes in saying, oh, thanks for the phone call, too, by the way, Christy.
Have
appreciate
a great day. Thanks,
bye. Yeah, you too. Be careful what you say to someone. It can't be taken back. Well, that's a good point. And if you say it the wrong way, if you approach it the wrong way, you're going to have some trouble. Let's go to AC. You're on WGN.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to chime in and say, I don't want to be negative, but I think about 90-92% of the people who say they want their spouse or boyfriend or girlfriend to lose weight for their health are full of it, you know.
Uh-huh. So you're saying that when we say, oh, I'm just doing it for them physically to be healthier,
yeah,
you think that we're really masking the true intention?
Yeah, because you want them to look better, but you don't want to say that. So you're like, oh, you know, you need to get healthier. Because, I mean, that's not it. I mean, I'd say, you know, about 8% of the people that say that are really mean it, you know, or if it's for a health reason or stuff like that. But I think most people that say, and I don't think, you know, and I would never, I don't think anyone should leave anyone just because they're heavy.
Right.
But I think people get confused with that when they ask their spouse or tell their spouse or whoever, you know, you should lose some weight, whatever. They think it's like an ultimatum, like, you know, I lose some weight or I'm leaving.
Are you married, AC, or no?
I am not. I have a girlfriend, though.
No. All right, well, would you ever say anything?
Probably not. I'm too nice for that, but, you know. But I think, you know, yeah, you should love the person and it shouldn't matter, and that in a perfect world, that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
But people still care, you know. You can't help to care if you care.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, if you care, you know, but you, it's how you go about it, I think. You know,
for sure.
All right, and how you care, how you treat the person, too.
Yeah. AC, we appreciate the phone call. I got to take a quick commercial break. 312-981-7200. How, if, and when should you tell someone, your partner, that they've gained a little bit of weight and maybe it's time to lose it? More after this on 720 WGN.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Mm-hmm. 720 WGN, a happy Monday afternoon, just after 2 o'clock, 2:07, from the Allstate Skyline Studio. John Hanson in for John Williams until 3 o'clock. And man, it is a perfect day for a stroll along our river, or better yet, hop on one of the boats and learn a little bit about our city. I think everyone who's been downtown has seen these boats going back and forth up and down the river. I'm sure many of you have been on these tours before. And I wonder if you've all ever pondered where these tours started, why they are what they are, and how long they've been going on for. So here to answer all those questions, we got a whole crew here today, so I'm going to do my best to introduce everyone. First, we have Todd over here on my left, right? Todd Heiser is the managing director of the firm that works with Neocon. We're going to talk about what Neocon is. Then we got Tom Carmichael, who is the River Cruise Tour Director and Chief Storyteller. That's a great title there.
What a title, huh?
Very good. And then we've got the legend, Bob Irving, who ran the first river cruise for in partnership with Neocon back in 1983. Gentlemen, thank you for coming here today.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Let's start with Neocon.
Sure.
Tell us what that is. It's 50 years this year, right?
Yeah, it's 50 years this year. It's held every June at the Merchandise Mart in Chicago, and it really is the commercial industry's launchpad for innovation. So it's a commercial furnishing show where you see furniture and new trends in workplace and design, but it's really expanded to become a real center for the city, center for design.
Can anyone stop by, or how does it work? Is it people in the industry, in the business world?
You know, it's primarily to the trade. However, if you want to go, you can register and pop in. There are many firms from around the world. And, you know, this year there's actually a great community park that Gensler designed on the river. So you can pop in and just enjoy the park, the art on the side of the building. But you can also see some furnishings on the first floor. Pop through the building if you register.
All right, what's the most popular furnishing these days? What's is it? Are we still mid-century modern feel moving forward? I don't know.
I mean, when you go to the Mart, I think you're going to see that things are moving outside, right? People are enjoying this beautiful day, and really, outside furnishings is really where it's at.
Cool. I would
see that.
I was actually going through the website and scrolling through the 60s and the 70s. It was a real sleek website you guys did. So if they can't make it down, what is the website where people can find more information on that?
It's just www.neocon.com.
Cool stuff. Neocon.com. All right. So what does Neocon have to do with why we have river cruises along our Chicago River? Bob, you want to tackle this story?
I'll try. Essentially, at that time, the Chicago Architecture Foundation, now the center, presumably was contacted by someone from Neocon, alas, I don't know who, and suggested we have some very important clients, and we'd like to entertain them. Would it be possible for someone to give a commentary on the river?
And what year? Was this 1983 when this started?
Right, this is 1983.
So it's June. It's 1983, we're along the river, and they say, we got to entertain some people, and they call you guys and say, put something together for us.
Oh, no, it was already pretty much intact.
Okay.
Way, way back in darkest 1972, we had run a very successful North Michigan tour, and then we decided that started at the Michigan south side of the Michigan Avenue Bridge. We would move and develop a tour going east along Wacker Drive, and I developed that, and we hopped back and forth across the bridges.
As a walking tour.
As a walking tour. And then we ended at what was then the Sears Tower.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of the information I already had in preparation for the boat tour. At that time, following just that pattern, we went across the river and just the south side, not the north side.
Did you have a boat ready to go?
Well, we found one. It just so
where? Actually, Craigslist wasn't around at the time.
There were two lawyers who had offices in the building that we were in at the time.
Okay.
And we discovered, my God, they have a boat. And it was not, at least to say, a yacht. It was a boat.
It was a boat.
The Mary Jane.
Okay.
It was, I believe, a very elderly once fire boat.
An old fire boat.
Yeah, a wooden, but it served, and that began. And of course, once I was on the river, it's a spectacular experience. Anyone who wants to take it, enjoy every moment of it. And I thought, we've got to do something, find a, and of course, since we had the material, pretty much, so it wasn't too difficult. We could just find the boat and so we did, and that started everything way back in 1983.
How long does it take from when you do this first tour, maybe Tom, this is well for you, from 83 or Bob, till this becomes a regular thing that you guys decide? Was it the next summer, later that summer?
No, it was not 1 year. It took us a couple of... We gave it, infrequently, but it wasn't a regular thing for a while. I don't even know exactly when we shifted to the current daily tour.
It's not an important question. Anyways.
We just had one boat in any case, not an entire flotilla that they have now.
Right. It is. It's a fleet you guys really have.
Right. Well, our fleet is with Chicago's First Lady, and we've been with them for over 25 years.
Mm-hmm. And what, I mean, when you talk about 1983 versus today, man, we're so lucky to live in this city now where the focus, we're putting so much focus on the river walk, the views, and really making sure that it looks pretty and we can ride up and talk about it. It must have changed a lot in these 25 years or so.
Well, if you think about what the river looked like in 1983, it really has been an amazing transformation. For example, River City down on the South Branch wasn't even there in 1983.
Right.
It was not for 3 years. On the North Branch, I think was the East Bank Club was 1979. So
okay.
It was brand new.
The gym was brand new.
It was brand new. And the Fulton House, The conversion happened in 1981, so it was just 2 years old. Really wasn't much on the North Branch, and that's probably the reason, Bob, you didn't take people up there, because there was very little to see.
You may notice, of course, that the East Bank Club, which people say, oh, no one's going to go to a club that far west. and of course, the...
it's on the east side of the river.
Right. And, of course, that wall is almost blank. I'm sure had they built this last year, it would have, of course, opened out gloriously with grand sheets of glass.
Right.
But, of course, at that time, remember, on the North Branch, what shall we say, the detritus of architecture and such like, at the south end of Goose Island, the remains of the Florida, which, of course, was the boat club originally before the Abiquit was purchased, and it just slowly sank there. It was an interesting romantic element on the North Branch tour, finally.
So we didn't have Yelp in 1983, but had we done it, how many stars would they have given you, Bob?
Oh, God.
What was the review like? Well, I mean, it was your first... I mean, you had done the walking tour, so you knew the material.
No.
But it's obviously a different perspective being on the boat. Were you nervous? Were you ready for it? Were you excited? Walk us through that day.
Oh, no, I can babble at any time. there's no necessity for...
There's five people nodding along with you right now, yeah, Bob.
And so we off and we went. And, of course, I knew the Neocom clients had been very happy with the tour. In fact, they wrote a nice letter, as I recall, which must be somewhere in the darkest files of CAC, you know, appreciating it. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why we've decided, well, we should be doing something here. And it is, as I say, a marvelous experience when you take it, you realize, my goodness, all kinds of things are happening. As I say, I always enjoy when you lose the attention of the people. And, of course, you say, what's the matter? And, of course, what it is Mama Duck, who's going with six little ducklings behind her into her serried rows assembled. And it's that sort of thing. You never know what you're going to find.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the magic of this river that we have and the architecture along it. So many of us walk by it every single day, and we maybe glance up every now and then, but we're so focused. This is where our center of commerce is. Obviously, more people live here than they used to live in the Loop area. But... what are some of the specs, Tom, and how many tours you do a day now? And how many?
Well, during the middle of the summer, like we are right now, we give a cruise.
Allegedly.
We get a boat goes out about every 30 minutes, starting at 9 o'clock. Last cruise goes out around 7:30, gets back around 9 o'clock. So there's plenty of opportunity, and so, with the nice weather now, it's a great time to be out and see the city. I don't know if people really appreciate what an unusual view they're getting, but if you think, for example, like the Circle Line in New York City, where you're going around the island of Manhattan and seeing the boats, seeing the city from the boat, you're pretty far from the buildings. Here in Chicago, on the Chicago River, you are right up next to them. You can really see the buildings, see the details. The way you can't in other places.
In fact, it projects a lot of shade onto the boat. If you're taking a late afternoon tour in the fall, perhaps bring a light jacket to put on. I will say that as a recommendation.
Yeah, particularly you get close to the lake, it can be pretty chilly.
Right. Todd, is there any partnership still with CAC and Neocon, or was it just a unlikely bonding together, and now you're just bonded by the same months so that you see the boats certainly along the Mart every day?
Well, I think there's certainly a bond between the architecture of the city, you know, the architecture center and Neocon, I think design throughout the city is really connected. So certainly there's still a great connection. I think maybe even more now starting this year with the connection of the Riverwalk and the boats and the Mart and the South Drive Plaza. I think it's a really exceptional time all the way down to Willis Tower and the old post office. So I think all along dotted, there's a strong connection with the center, Neocon, and certainly the architecture along the river.
And I think that whether it's a temporary event that's happening in the downtown area or a permanent business, the more connected we are, and we encourage our own residents and our tourists and our visitors to get on these boats and look up and experience it. I mean, you just develop a deeper connection to the city. I mean, I've lived in this area for my entire life and had never stepped on one of those boats. And to get that, it was maybe an hour and a half, 90 minutes or so.
90 minutes, right, yeah.
90 minutes. I mean, you learn more in that time. so much, in fact, that I need to go again because I didn't take enough notes last time, but it was just so fascinating. And I imagine you can learn new things every single time and different people telling different stories, of course. Bob, you sort of alluded to the fact that you no longer like calling it the Willis Tower. You'd prefer not to call it that, right?
Right. It's kind of, well... Mm-hmm. Cirrus is an important dimension.
Of course.
Of Chicago.
So I guess what I'm asking, where I was alluding to this, do you have any new buildings that you particularly love or particularly don't love? Or do you love each one as for all their faults and blemishes along the way?
Oh, I don't like that hierarchical approach. I must confess, I love them all.
Really?
No, it's just true that, you know, that it's the seventh most beautiful building. And, you know, oh, no, you know.
So you don't have a favorite either, though?
No, I mean, you have a whole series of different people, different personalities, different approaches. And, of course, obviously, they're going to like different buildings. And so that sort of narrows things.
Well, aren't we blessed to have so many different buildings
in
such a short period of time, from designs going back to the 20s or before that, and then through even till now, the new buildings continue to go up. In fact, people try to scale the buildings. I don't know if you read that news story. That's not recommended, of course. Yes.
No, we don't ask our clients to do that.
Exactly.
But this, after all, is the city of architecture.
Mm-hmm. Sure is. Tom, recommendations for people if they're looking to get a tour here sometime soon? Go online, buy tickets ahead of time? Or?
To make sure you have a ticket, particularly on weekends, I recommend that you go online and buy a ticket. Of course, you can buy a ticket at the center, which is right across the street from our docks at Michigan Avenue and Wacker Drive, or you can buy a ticket right at the dock.
And I'd say if you can, take public transportation. That's a great way to get around. There are parking lots in the area if you need to, and go ahead and do that. But I'd say anyone that has never done one of these tours, please make sure you do. I don't care if you've lived in the city for 70 years and never been on the boat. Do it. It's something spectacular to look at. And Todd, remind us all again about what's going on at NeoCon, the dates, and where people can find out more information.
It's the next 2 days, all the way until Wednesday, it's in the Merchandise Mart. You can pop over to the Merchandise Mart and register in the main lobby. Check out the South Drive, because there's a park installation that will become permanent in the next year there, done by Gensler. Check out the furnishings. I think they're really exceptional.
That's cool stuff. You just got a shout out, by the way, on the text line. Bob, last question. I'm going to leave it to you, since you are the self-proclaimed babbler of the group. If you don't have a favorite building, that's fine, and I appreciate that. I respect that. Is there a favorite story or tale or 1 minute little blurb you can give our listeners a fact about one of the buildings or something along the Chicago River, just to entice them to find you and take a tour?
You put me on the spot.
I sure have. Do you want a commercial break and then come back with the story?
Perhaps that's the best thing.
All right, we'll take a quick commercial break and get that story on 720 WGN. Joined by Todd Heiser of NeoCon, the managing director of Gensler, an architect that designed NeoCon, and Tom Carmichael, the CAC River Cruise Tour Director and Chief Storyteller. That's a great title, by the way, Tom. Let me turn your mic on there. That's a great great title.
It is a great title.
Is it on your LinkedIn profile then, too? Chief Storyteller? Pretty good stuff. And Bob Irving, who ran the first river cruise back in 1983, when this relationship between NeoCon and they reached out to CAC saying, we need some entertainment. Get us a yacht and give us some information. Okay, Bob, I've given you the commercial break. So we look at our buildings every day. We go up and down the river. There's stories to be told all along it, some sad, some inspiring. What's one little one that you have for us here?
Well, one that's sort of ridiculous.
I love that.
We had, as I say, delusions of grandeur and decided before we developed the final tour that we would go down the river to Chinatown and make our turn there. As you perhaps know, there is a vertical lift railroad bridge on the south side, and we made arrangements for that to rise, and we grandly passed through, and apparently the bridge tender thought we were going to Buenos Aires.
He went home, huh?
He left. No, this is long before we cell phones. We couldn't get back, and I remember, it will always be graven on my mind, Iron Street, which is probably, you've never been there. Uh-huh. It's not richly furnished. It's a kind of bare area. We pulled over there.
Mm-hmm. You pulled the boat over.
Right. And then, of course, we started calling through the Coast Guard for some help.
How many people are on the boat with you?
God knows. I can tell you in terms of the fires that rose from people's throats the next day we received, because we had to drop people off. We couldn't leave them there forever, and people kept saying, I had to get downtown, I had to go. And so we left them in the middle of no place and got taxi cabs coming down. But as I say, most of the letters that came to us and then were probably to be written on asbestos.
Thank goodness there wasn't Yelp at the time for that. No. Well, it's all settled now. You're all okay.
Oh, yes. We decided let's not go quite that far.
Bob, that was a wonderful. Tom, how can people find out more information about the tours and where they can go for that?
Well, they can go to our website, architecture.org. Easy to remember. They can read a description of the tour there. They can go online and just type in what to do in Chicago, and we're going to come up either as number one or number two.
That's called SEO, search engine optimization. And Todd, NeoCon starts today, right?
Starts today and goes all the way through Wednesday.
Guys, thank you so much for stopping on by. I appreciate it. Seven 20 WGN. John Hanson in for John Williams on this Monday afternoon. Elif, by the way, Bob Irving, if you could turn down the bed music there. Bob Irving was the most fascinating, had the most fascinating vocals I could ever have. I wish he would tell any story, every story, all the time, is what I'm getting at.
I agree with you. I thought he had a great timbre. And,
yes.
He had a British dialect in there.
Yeah, he had a little British dialect. It's as if Rick Hogan kind of had a British dialect and said, alas, all the time.
Correct,
alas. He was a wonderful guest, and so was everyone else from the CAC and the OCON. Just really fascinating stuff. Hey, I wanted to talk about the news click here. Friday's news click, by the way, was, should Illinois forbid smoking cigarettes in cars with minors present? Yes was 53%. No was 47%. I'm kind of surprised, if not shocked, by that number. I really thought that we'd have a lot more people saying that you shouldn't be able to smoke in your car with kids right next to you. I don't know if it's a libertarian thing that people saying, well, they shouldn't tell us what we can or can't do with our kids in the car. If I want to smoke a cigarette, I'm going to smoke a cigarette in my car. But really thought that number would be a little bit higher. So, yes, again, 53% should be able to smoke in their car with minors present, and 47% saying no. And that was our news click question for Friday. And, of course, I'm caught here a little bit with my pants down. I cannot find the news click question for today. And Elif is off finding our next guest. So I think I'm a little bit stuck. Oh, it's about lunch break. That's what it is. There we go. I found it now. Okay. Oh, good radio. Don't worry. John Williams is back tomorrow. Here's your news click for today. How long do you keep your lunch break? There's a fascinating story about how millennials don't take lunch breaks. And if they do, they do it really quick. It's because they feel guilty. They don't think that you should take, or they don't think they should take long lunch breaks. And they feel like they're being judged by their superiors if they take longer lunch breaks. The fact of the matter is that older people that have been working for a long time, they feel like they're entitled to their 1 hour lunch break. So how long do you keep your lunch break? That is the news click question. Our options are 15 minutes. I like to keep it short and get out of work earlier. 30 minutes, I like to relax but stay productive. 1 hour, I like a 1 hour lunch break. I earn that time, darn it. Or lunch break, what's that? So you either don't get one or you don't take one. For me, I've always, when I had a job that had less time constraints as radio or TV does, I like to take a short lunch break just because move through it quickly, eat quickly. That's what I like to do. And that means you get home faster. I never got the idea of sitting around for an hour when you didn't need to for a lunch break and get home later in the day. But it seems like people of a different generation feel like that longer lunch break is more important. So go to WGNradio.com and the news click. You can answer there and let us know why if you go on the Facebook page for John Williams. Okay, we're going to be back after this to talk about if your plants are going to be dead or alive after a wet spring and a bitterly cold winter here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Hope you enjoyed your lunch break, or maybe you're still on it. Maybe you're taking a long one or a late one. Some people don't take them at all, especially millennials. They try and keep them quick. That's not always an option, right, James? On you're on WGN.
Well, you know what? I was listening to talking about how people take their breaks. Like, mm-hmm. you mentioned that if somebody doesn't take a lunch break, they get the chance to leave early. You're assuming that everybody, and I'm not saying you people in general, that they're assuming that everybody has the same structure type of work
right.
or hour. For example, people that work in retail, I've been in management and retail. If you're a manager, you might have to work to a certain time because then another manager takes over.
Right.
If you skip your lunch break, you can't leave because you're the manager on duty. I've worked at call centers where I used to work for Montgomery Ward. I worked at a call center for parts. I did get a lunch break. I took a bit, but you know, if you just left early, there'd be nobody manning the phones until once again other people came in to relieve your shift.
Yeah, that's a great point. Hey, James, I got to ask. So let's say you were doing one of those shifts, and let's say if you had a choice between an hour and a half hour. And if you chose a half hour, you got to leave a half hour earlier. Would you take it, or do you like having the long hour lunch break?
I used to get a half hour at Montgomery Ward at the call center, for example, and I used to take that. But there are other jobs where I had an hour. I would take a half hour, but it wouldn't be so much as, you know, it's just because I wouldn't really eat because I sometimes would have something in breakfast or I would go home and cook. So it was more practicality of eating rather than, you know, relaxing.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, James, I appreciate the phone call. Have a good one, okay?
Take care.
A man who never takes a break ever, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, doesn't matter. We call on him last minute. He runs over her ear, is the great Tony Abruscato. Tony, how you doing?
I'm doing really great. Really great. Thanks.
Better than our Boxwoods. Man,
yes. You know,
and I anecdotally, walking around the neighborhood, I notice a lot of them are brown. I don't have a Boxwood, but I have a different kind of tree bush. I'll have to show it to you later on the back porch. And that one's got some brown spots to it. It's still got some green to it. Man, was it the cold snap? Was it this colder weather in the spring? The wet weather? A combination of everything? Why are we seeing so many of these?
Yes.
everything.
A little bit of all of that. You know, the and some of it disease. There, for the longest time, there were some boxwood diseases going on, and mm-hmm. so there was a shortage of boxwoods. But you're seeing them now, these Arctic blast winters that we're having, these higher cold temperatures and late cold temperatures. We were in here the last time it was snowing in April.
Yes.
and so that becomes part of it, and they damage, and then you add all of this excessive rain on top of that, and it really puts them in a bad spot.
And when a boxwood is brown, it's not like some other trees where if you have a perennial that doesn't necessarily perform the greatest one year, where you just kind of cross your fingers and hope it gets better. These things, if they're brown, they're done.
Yeah, it's pretty much when they look brown and rusty, you know, kind of rusty.
Right.
They're down and out. One of the things though to do is if you see some branches that are in there now that may be brown branches sticking out of your green, cut those out.
Okay.
Cut them out and try to trim back. Right now, I'm going back. I need to trim back the boxwood to have them healthier,
mm-hmm.
so that rather than putting its energy in new growth, it's going to put in energy into reestablishing the growth that's already there.
The problem with boxwoods, though, is sometimes you're putting like 9 of them in a row to create almost like a hedge line.
Yes.
You lose, and maybe they've matured over the years. You lose one, it's like, oh my goodness.
Well, you know,
you gotta try and find a matching one for that size or start over.
Well, and it's the rule. It's the one in the middle that dies.
Yes, of course.
They never die on the ends.
Right, where you could make it like form a nice arch or going
right.
a tapering effect. Nope, it's the one right smack dab in the middle.
And that's it. You end up trying to match that boxwood mm-hmm. and in size and color and density, and it's really, really difficult to do.
Yeah. Other plants, I was reading an article about, you know, by June 10th, usually I have some stuff out on the patio. The only thing I have is the stuff that you gave me for City Grange when I came out for the live segment. It's just, you know, we haven't had great weekends. We finally had a pretty nice one this past weekend, but I went with my brother on a boat instead, and I'm almost feeling like I'm so far behind, but because of the delayed summer that we've been having, we really aren't that far behind. You can still grow some vegetables if you start right now, right? I mean, we're not too late for this stuff.
Absolutely. We were out at Gallagher Way yesterday for, you know, the Get Growing Foundation, and we had planting parties for the kids, and we had container gardening classes, and so they had mixed herbs and vegetables in those containers. And so it's not too late, but you're right. Things, you know, normally we'd get some things rolling in May and have things going along. I was out at my house this weekend, and, you know, I've got empty containers out
right.
there that I haven't filled in, but it's just really difficult. And so the industry as a whole is having a difficult time because they're not able to do some of the work that they are, and then the weather turns nice and everybody's like, well, I need you to come and do my patio
right now.
I need you to do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so there, those are some really big, big challenges. But, you know, normally we're starting to think about how do we transition into summer containers. So
right.
You have your spring containers, your summer containers, your fall, and then winter. And so, you know, usually mid in 30 days from now, 30, 40 days from now, you're thinking about summer containers. So the one thing is that they'll be nice and lush while they're out there, and you might get extra time
on
out
the back
of them.
End, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't even ask people to do this, but the 815 already chimed in. Just tuned in. Could you talk about how to save burning bushes from the winter? Ours don't look good. The burning bushes, the red ones, right?
They have the color of the leaf will change. Well, one of the things with deciduous bushes and coming into that area is, you know, covering them a lot of times. Some don't need it, some do. It's either putting burlap around those, mm-hmm. depending on how big they are. You've seen the styrofoam cones and things. But I always tell people, too, try not to have all of that we talked about back in April. It wasn't enough to just lay plastic over your plants that were there, because the plastic touching the plant and the cold touching the plastic, it just basically went right through. So you want to wrap some of these up where you can. There's also look at where you're planting, or if there's things that you can do to shield some of the wind, because oftentimes it's not just the cold, but it's actually if they're getting a strong wind where it's whipping through, mm-hmm. you know, the frostbite, so to speak, and the same in the plant. And so also planting some things that'll create a buffer for some of that wind, but typically taking a wrap on some of those plants will be really helpful.
I, fingers crossed, think we're past the frost of Chicago. So, you know, a lot of the damage that has been done, even if it hasn't killed your plant, a lot of the damage that's done, it's already done. But now is the time to start thinking, even this early, and especially as we get towards the summer, you know, don't forget these moments when then at the last minute next fall, when you're like, oh, I don't have any of the tools I wanted to be able to cover these things up. Stock up. Put the stuff in the garage now while you're thinking about it.
Absolutely, because, and oftentimes it may just pop up really quick, you know, but it's part of that planning out, you know. That's mm-hmm. one nice thing about, you know, with gardening, you can plan out these different seasons and you don't have to wait to the end. You can also look at different ideas of what you might want to do. So if it's more of a, you know, more of a burlap, and do you want to put stakes up and create the barrier? And so, yeah, I wouldn't wait to the last minute on all of these things. But to that point, a lot of the damage is already done that's going to be there. And so you can use this time also in how to turn around some of that damage.
Mm-hmm.
So trimming them back, where we talked about trimming some of the bushes back, cutting out some of the impacted plant material that's there. And the other is putting some nutrients. You know, real estate is location, 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 mm-hmm. and gardening is soil, soil, soil. And so with all of this rain, especially that it's leaching out the soil and the nitrogen and the nutrients that are in that soil. So now's a great time to think about putting that organic fertilizer back into the soil.
I was just going to ask. So sometimes back in my day, I used to get the cheapest bag of soil I could find, because there'd be one that was $3 more. It'd say, oh, organic, full of nutrients. I think that doesn't really matter. I'm wrong, right?
You're wrong. Yeah,
yes.
You're wrong. And
okay.
So part of that, you know, I was at Prosser Career Academy
uh-huh.
on Friday. We're doing a community impact project with them. And one of the things that they talked about was they did some trial beds. And so the one trial bed had pig manure in it. The other trial bed was the cheap soil
mm-hmm.
that you got from the store. Everything grew,
mm-hmm.
but the organic fertilizer in that bed, everything was three times the size
wow.
of what they were growing in. And so it's a big part of it, and you've got to look at it. And you can also have your soil tested. There's areas where you can go in and get your soil tested if things aren't growing right. But you definitely, and especially this year, you want to throw in you know, nitrogen into the soil and different things. And we certainly prescribe organic on that, but there's other, you know, fertilizers are out there, but we believe that the organics make the best.
6-0 chimes in, my Rose of Sharon didn't do well this winter. It's trying to come back. Do you have any advice to help?
in some of that, again, it may be where it's cutting some of it back so that it's putting more nutrients in a smaller amount of plant. I would look at the organic fertilizers going back inside there and helping it. And you want to do that before it gets hot.
Okay.
So, you know, I had a friend once, they're like, oh, I put in, and it wasn't organic fertilizer, but they put a chemical fertilizer in the middle of their planters in July when it was 90 degrees outside, and it just was scorched earth. All the chemicals were getting hot and burning all the plants. So now's a great time to throw in that fertilizer before it gets too hot, and then plants get to settle in before, you know, because they'll come out of now all of this tough winter, all of this rain, and then drastic heat, and it just keeps banging away at them, chip, chip, chip. So now's a great time to get out there, especially in some of the cooler temperatures that we've had, getting out and mixing in that compost and that organic fertilizer.
Talk to us about the Get Growing Foundation. It's a great way to make gardening a year-round thing and help a lot of people out at the same time.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. We're, you know, we formed the Get Growing Foundation out of the efforts of the Chicago Flower and Garden Show. And we're focusing on three main areas. One is inspiration through education. So the gardens that we have and the educational classes that we have at the Flower and Garden Show. And now we have a garden at the Taste of Chicago this year, July 10th through the 14th. And then we're also doing community impact projects. So we're working with different underserved communities and areas to help them with community garden. We're creating at Armstrong Elementary School, we're creating an outdoor classroom and community educational garden. And so we're taking those principles of the Flower and Garden Show and bringing them in year round. And then with our good friends at City Grange, we've created the United We Blossom program, which is career path development, job training, and job placement. And so as a nonprofit organization, we're really focusing around and trying to help on a year-round basis and get education out into the community. This past Sunday, I mentioned we were at Gallagher Way. We did free container gardening classes, and so we had people that were able to take home a free container. But we also talked about, you know, what to do to make that successful along the way. And so there's more information about us at getgrowingfoundation.org, but a lot of it at chicagoflower.com as
and
well.
And City Grange is 5055 Northwestern? Am I
5500
close?
Northwestern.
5500. I had the letter or the numbers right, just out of order.
Yeah.
5500 Northwestern. So I'm going to go there. I'm going to pop on over. I want to get some vegetables to grow. Am I not too late? Like, what's one or two?
Actually, this weekend, we were selling pepper plants.
Uh-huh.
We were selling tomato plants. We had all of the herbs that were out there. So it's definitely not too late.
Okay.
You know, when you plant early, you're planting a cooler crop. And so those tend to expire, you know, by
earlier,
this time.
Yeah.
So now you've got, you know, we were just talking about it, you know, because it's the planting geek side, is that I love to plant radishes because they grow really fast.
Okay.
And so you can see something. It's like, wow, I've got
instant
a radish.
Gratification.
Yeah. So you've got your radishes, your carrots, you know, you're going into your tomatoes and squash and things like that. So now's not a bad time to plant at all.
Good. Good to know. Yeah. All right, Tony, thank you so much for stopping by. The founder of Get Growing Foundation. Give that website, getgrowingfoundation.org.
.org, yeah.
Tony, thanks for stopping by,
thanks
always.
For having me, John.
You didn't bring me a cannoli this time, though.
No, next time.
We'll talk about that off the air. More on 720 WGN. All right, I'll leave you with this here. John Hansen, wrapping up for John Williams. A passenger on a UK-Pakistan flight at Manchester Airport caused severe delays after opening the emergency exit door on the airplane instead of the bathroom door, which is what they were reaching for. The good news of all of this, because I don't know how anyone could reach for the exit door instead of trying to go to the bathroom. I mean, the bathroom is just that little door you push and you open it. You can probably even open it when it's not locked. I mean, if you just use the force, it has a little light over it. It has a bathroom sign on. It's pretty clearly marked. An emergency exit door has that gigantic handle that you have to... I mean, how could anyone think that they were trying to get into the bathroom of the aeroplane? Wasn't the case at all. The good news out of all of this is that the plane was still on the ground. Thank goodness. But, I mean, can you imagine someone in the middle of a flight going, I'm going to go to the bathroom, and opening that door on up?
I was worried that I couldn't figure out how to open the exit door if it were an emergency.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of stare at it and say, could I do that?
Do you upgrade into the exit row and then
I'm like,
panic?
I'm not sure I can do this. No,
right.
No. When they ask you, are you able to perform the duties?
Well, maybe that's why they upgraded, because they thought it was really close to the bathroom. I don't know. You know, they just looked down over there. It was an emergency, maybe. I don't know.
I'm going to guess there was drinking involved in that.
I sure hope so. Oh, man. But luckily, everyone's okay. But, I mean, thank goodness it was on the ground, because I mean, you imagine someone's right. looking for that sort of thing. But, I mean, the moment someone goes over to that door and even touches that handle, I'm tackling that person. Right?
Citizen's arrest.
I don't know.
We can count on you.
That's right. How I'll end the show today. What do you guys got coming up?
Well, you can't actually open that in flight.
Oh, you can't?
No.
Oh, is it because of the pressure, the pressure on it, or just
a number of reasons you can't open that in flight? Yeah.
Well, now I want to try it.
Yeah. Okay. Go for it.
I thought it was the bathroom.
Don't tell me I can't do anything, Rokan. I'm going to try it.
Yeah. There was a plane. There was a door on the 727 that you were able to open in flight because it was in back of the plane underneath the tail, and that's the one that DB Cooper jumped out of after he stole the money.
Right.
They eventually made that impossible to open during flight. They had a whole plan for that.
I tell you what, though, Ro, I feel a lot better about life right now. So thank you for that piece
of
information.
Thank you very much. Thank you, John.